the radical left, the Marxists, the anarchists, the agitators, the looters, and people who, in many instances, have absolutely no clue what they are doing.
Welcome to What Radicalized You, a podcast of stories and experiences that have shaped people's ideas about our world and the way society should function.
My name is Thuraya Zidane, and, you know, although we have so many different identities that we might feel align with who we are, one that stays with me, regardless of each of my identities, is being Palestinian. As a young child, I lived in Palestine for a couple of years, other than the times I visited while growing up, and then later lived there again in my late teenage years. I understood at a very young age that hatred and power and whiteness and checkpoints and violence and policing were all parts of the occupation of Palestine. I remember when I was 8 years old, I went to the corner store with my brother, who was six at the time. We were actually living with my grandfather in East Jerusalem. And a group of children were also headed in that direction. And so while we were in the store, you know, just really, I want to say almost oblivious to an extent, we were there, we were having a nice time enjoying ourselves. And I remember that while we were there, I remember hearing like screams and cries from the other children. And I turned around to see that there were a couple of Israeli soldiers who violently grabbed two of the boys that came in with us. And they were, you know, around the same age that my brother and I were at the time. And so, you know, I remember thinking even as a child, like, are these kids' moms, like, they're probably going to look for them. They're going to be concerned for them. They're not going to know where they are. You know, very distinctly remember that one of the boys was wearing a pair of glasses and his glasses being crushed by one of the soldiers that came into the corner store as we were buying candy. And so I think that that was the first of many times in my childhood that I would witness the apartheid state attacking children for existing as Palestinian. It was almost like there was no space for children to be children. You're just an adult as a child, because these were not things that were explained to us. These were just our experiences and observances, just like the other adults that were there. This builds to what radicalized me because of empathy. And I think that, you know, empathy being the capacity to understand or feel what other people are experiencing from our ability to place ourselves in the position of other people. I feel like I built that from early childhood, you know, because of these experiences of living in Palestine as a young person. And so I think that people who do not have an understanding of empathy are usually those who are likely to criticize people for being radical in their beliefs, not realizing that empathy and an authentic love for people is a radical act. Because what this means is wanting people to live in an environment that is not dictated and controlled by racism and colonialism and imperialism and displacement, occupation, ethnic cleansing, and oppression. And without empathy, I don't think people can reach this realization. And so I want to say that I started building on these radical perceptions since early childhood, but of course I didn't have the language to express this. Even that it was almost normalized in that society where, I don't want to say it's acceptable, but we're, you know, Palestinian people are expected to take the oppression and experience the oppression and almost not respond. Right? Because then responding, you're labeled as extremist, or you're labeled as a terrorist, or you're labeled as anti-Semitic. If you respond to being oppressed, and if you respond to the violence and aggression and Zionism that you're being exposed to, that you're born into. And so I am starting to see that there's a shift in this at least in the United States, I think there's some shift towards people, you know, starting to come to realizations that are closer to the truth than before. And so after living in Palestine for a couple of years during elementary school, I continued my education in New Jersey, and I went through the public school system my entire life in New Jersey. And I think that, again, although I didn't have the language, and I used to feel like, you know, of the two parties that exist in this country, I'm more aligned with the Democratic Party. And my empathy from my experiences would always align me with whoever injustice was being committed towards. And so I think that's why I always lean towards ideas, although I didn't, again, have the language at the time, of Black liberation and justice for people of color and people who are undocumented and immigrants and refugees and people with disabilities, and always leaning in that direction and for the justice of people, but not really, you know, knowing, like being able to articulate where this was coming from or what these feelings were, other than wanting a kind of equality amongst people who are being oppressed. And so, you know, back to the two-party system growing up, you know, I thought there were only two choices because that's what they teach us in public schools. I didn't think that you could be for neither one of those and that you can recognize that essentially they're two and the same. And so the Democratic Party never sat well with my spirit, even before recognizing that it was an option to not support the two-party system in this oligarchy. And the reasons it didn't sit well with me, they support the murder of brown and Black people here in the United States and in countries outside of the U.S., as we know. And so being Palestinian and watching this party support the death of Palestinians, including the politicians that identify as most progressive, we'll put quotations around progressive, made it something that I could not align with. And so, you know, in my later 20s, I started to steer away from this because even the most progressive were not progressive. And I think that even if I could somehow put aside my Palestinian identity in the way that many of my people do, and many of non-Black people of color do, and I want to align myself with this party, I still would not be able to further support as a collective for systemic and structural racism, policing, and the racism and inequality in public education. And so after my college years, and I went to college also here in New Jersey, I attended Montclair State University, actually. And, you know, I started teaching very shortly after graduating. And I teach in a district that's considered an urban school system here in northern New Jersey. And so I think that that also built on my steering towards a radical lens in my mid to late 20s. And then for sure, I want to say in the last 5 years, you know, something happens to people after they turn 30. And I'm really glad for it. I wish I turned 30 a long time ago. I'm 35 now. And so I feel like the shift in these last several years, where if something is not sitting well with my soul and I don't align with it and it's not for people, it's just not a thing that's for me. When we can put aside the perception of other people and not value ourselves based on how other people value us, this builds on that ability to start making shifts in the way that we see things and seeing the truth for what it is. It's so much easier to not address the truth and to continue blindly. So I think that addressing the truth is definitely like a part of making shifts and, you know, steering away from what we're expected to think and believe and act upon, and just the process of finding ourselves and accepting ourselves and these identities that are not encouraged, right? Like, we know that people who are labeled as radical are not people who are tend to be very popular, right? And so in my teaching, you know, I want my interactions with my students to first be of kindness and empathy. And the content to me is secondary. I don't think we can teach people that we don't love and that we don't care for. And I don't think people can learn from those who don't love them and don't see them. So I've been starting my classes with something that I call a check-in. And I do this every day. And, you know, very early on in my career, I used to get right into the content because I was so concerned about, you know, teaching the entire class period and not wanting the kids to like be off of the pacing. And I think that my teaching has also become radical over the years in that the content is now secondary. And the well-being of the humans in front of me is what's far more important. That's what's crucial in the classroom setting. And so I start out with these check-ins where I ask students, how are you really feeling? And we go around the room and, you know, I individually ask them. And this is where I learn that someone didn't sleep or someone skipped breakfast or someone's family parents are in the hospital. Someone worked until midnight and they're exhausted. And I feel like we take humanity out of teaching where it's like, you know, you're going to be punished for putting your head down. You're going to be punished if you're not on point every single day. And where's the human, you know, element in this? And so I just don't want that to be what kids that I'm interacting with every day take away. Even if in June people say, well, what did you learn in Miss Zidane's class? If they say kindness and empathy and they don't mention the content, I feel like that suffices. And so as a teacher of almost 10 years now, you know, I'm reminded every day that this failed system controls and destroys public education and that our kids across the country don't have resources they need to learn. They're made to follow a Eurocentric curriculum. They're policed. They're given non-nutritious meals. Their mental health is not supported. Students and teachers face microaggressions. And this is a result of racism and an absence of living wages. When I'm talking about this, you know, I'm referring to Black students and non-Black students of color, along with teachers who are not white passing. Districts will talk about achievement gaps and learning gaps, but that's clearly not what is holding back our kids. And so I think that, you know, I reached a realization years ago that this is not a system that can be reformed. How do you reform something that, you know, where the thing's foundation was built on hatred and white supremacy and racism and colonialism and imperialism? Because of the more severe attacks in Gaza in the spring of 2021, I definitely noticed a shift in the perception of the American public, and probably more so, you know, young people in this country, college-aged and then young adults as well. I started to notice more of a shift in this awareness that didn't exist before, although the occupation has been ongoing, as we know, since 1948. And I do think that a part of that has to do with it having been a trend at that time. We saw, you know, people saw it posted on social media. People saw celebrities talking about it. And so I think that that makes it a more attractive cause to people who are disconnected. I do want to say that probably, you know, the one thing that came out of that, came out of it being a trend, was that, you know, you started to see that more people were becoming aware. Because of the power of social media for people in Palestine, it almost became, not even almost, but it became that the apartheid state of Israel could no longer defend or cover certain truths, because now we were seeing it from the perception of Palestinian people in Palestine, and not only from the perception of Palestinians in the diaspora talking about their family back home. Although we know that we've had social media for some years now, but I think only in the last few years did it become, you know, so much more of a tool for Palestinians to show people in the world what was happening in the Western countries in particular, you know, where people tend to be supporters of the apartheid state of Israel. My one concern about this is always that, you know, people are only going to care when it's trendy and when the brutalization is at its peak, and not the day-to-day brutalization that Palestinians experience. For instance, this morning, as you may have seen in Sheikh Jarrah in Jerusalem, there's a home that's being demolished belonging to the Salhiya family, I believe. And so I feel like we need to like, if we're going to care, we need to care every day. And not only when there are much more severe attacks certain weeks than others in the year. And you probably also have a creator page on Instagram. I was looking at like the setting and numbers of mine because it's creator page and it shows you like which posts are more popular than others. And when I looked the other day, I was surprised to see that it was not the ones related to education, but the ones on Palestine. So I said, okay, so like people are hopefully reading these and gaining some information and learning and becoming more aware. Now, I do think that when people realize, I don't think it's acceptable any longer to give excuses. I'll hear a lot of people of color and Palestinians in the diaspora even say, well, people might not know, like they might not be aware. And so I think that we need to really discard that excuse. It's not acceptable anymore in this time. And I think that the question now becomes, once we have this awareness, what are we going to do? Like, that's the next question. It's not enough to only know. Like, now that you know, because apparently you didn't know, what's the next step? And so I think that that piece is really important. And this is why we cannot remove empathy when we examine social justice causes, you know, like Black liberation in the United States and like Palestine, because this empathy, even though it's exhausting to have empathy, to have true empathy, people who don't have empathy can just move on day to day and not pay attention really to anything other than what's in their bubble and to their personal lives and personal challenges only. And empathy is what makes us not turn a blind eye every day. And that's why I think this is something that's so important. It's important to teach and it's important to build and it's important to cultivating that in the classroom is very important. I started to notice weeks and months into the check-ins since September, you know, in reference to, I'll just talk about the school year, I'm now noticing that students are checking in with each other in the classroom. Like, you know, a couple of weeks ago, a student said to the other student, by the way, when we checked in last week, you mentioned your mom was in the hospital. I want to know how your mom is doing. Like, what are the updates on that? And so it creates, you know, empathy and kindness and humanity in the classroom with the students amongst each other. It's not that environment where you're just coming in and you're sitting down and you're to yourself the entire time and, you know, you're only focused on yourself and no one else is there. Sometimes we can get into that and, you know, especially at the high school and college setting. So I think it's really important. And I think it's so beautiful to watch them interact with each other based on the building of empathy and kindness since the start of the school year. And it's something that as educators, we really have to be patient with because you're not going to see the fruit of that right away. It's not something we're going to see in weeks or even a couple of months. Sometimes it could take several months to build that, but it's definitely worth the while. And it's definitely worth students knowing that they're seen as people in the classroom first before they're seen as students. And something that really resonates with me, no matter how many times kids will say this, is you're the only teacher that asked me how I was doing today or how I was feeling. And it's not so much to even blame teachers, because I know that teachers are pressured to teach the entire period and to try their best not to get off topic and to only talk about textbooks and content and to follow pacing and curriculum and guides. And people are afraid for their careers in many instances. But I do think that we should be reminded, you know, as educators, that it's really important to not remove the humanity and empathy from the teaching component.